But I had to drop a ton of books.
If there's one thing I say about thighs, it's that they shouldn't be drawn by whoever that is.
Oh my goodness.
I always say that.
You know what? I feel like always. I've seen this
weird
guy.
Even in instances where it has like no relevance.
Like at church?
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I've seen this guy before, and I remember it not being very
Wolverine?
Good.
He's not real, right?
No,
he's a comic book character.
The guy who drew him.
The guy who drew, what is? Pierre Federici.
I remember saying the name, and it's a fun name to say, but it's not fun to look at.
He magically made Wolverine, which was one of my favorite Marvel books. I couldn't even read it.
He has nice things to say about you guys.
Well, I know, it's because I help him move.
I think
he moves a lot. Like he gets.
You move a lot.
I do move a lot.
I do this every time. Are we recording?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. This is the first time. This is the fastest we've ever gotten to talk about comics ever.
It starts off with us talking about comics. Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
That never happens.
Yeah. I like to have a start mid conversation because it's like, oh, you walked into the room where we're hanging out.
It'd be way better if I.
It's a stylistic choice.
If I
like
I could
to
record
try
the theme song.
This
I
is weird.
You should
my
do
nuts
that.
Are
I always
hanging
like
out of my pants. So are you walked in on this?
Only your nuts are hanging out of your pants?
I always try to start the thing in the middle of a chat. Anyway.
That was a kitchen shattering.
Here we are. This is like the worst environment to record. We have the noisiest dishwasher in the world going by.
Don't worry, your fart drowned it out.
This dishwasher is absurd. I'll be in the other room reading a book, and it sounds like there's an earthquake happening. Nicole, how shitty is our dishwasher? It sucks. She said,
Nicole, how shitty is your husband?
That wasn't very nice. We got, I mean, at least for once, Bender's not making noise.
It's because he got in trouble, because he yelled. Because
he flipped out. He always yells at me.
He just gets so excited to see you.
He barks like a...
And
he's like a fan of you.
And I'm not excited, I'm more terrified.
Lovable.
I came by his house three times today to drop off stuff, and the house was empty, so I let myself in.
Did he bark once?
The first time he got really excited to see me, and I came over and petted him, and then the second time that I came back a couple hours later, he was totally bored with me.
No.
Just like,
here's the thing.
You're not going to hang out with me.
The first time someone gets there, he's just like, yes. Second time, he's just like, all right, it's good to see you.
Right on. Mm-hmm.
Right on. Till next time.
Did you use your Bender voice?
He's a fuckhead, though. He ruined one of my comics earlier today.
Which one?
We'll talk about it when we get to it.
Okay.
But, so, without any further ado, welcome to the Geek Stampede Comics Roundup for the issue 11, volume... why can't I think of the word episode? I said every... I kind of danced around it there.
Issue.
Episode 11.
Like
issue.
Issue
11.
Yeehaw.
Issue, episode, volume number 11.
Comics podcast. We're the Geek Stampede podcast coming hell or high water.
Yeah.
That.
For the week of Wednesday,
good.
June the 26th, 2013.
That's the year.
This was a fucking insane Wednesday.
Yeah,
I know. This was
we
the
had
biggest.
So many books.
Mm-hmm.
I had 32, and
oh,
I could
that's
only read
than
half
had.
Of them.
I had 14, and
I think
I was
had
like
18 or something like that, which is still insane
so
for me.
So many books. I had,
if you'll recall,
like
the week before when I had four and I had to read Age of Ultron during the show because I had nothing to say, this week, I got stuff to say, boys.
That's like $140, is that not?
I think I dropped 90 something, so maybe I didn't quite have 30. I had 32 on my pull list, but I put a couple back on the shelf.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up Adventures of Superman, I didn't pick up Hoax Hunters,
I didn't pick up
Uncanny.
I didn't.
The new Andy Diggle book. And there was a couple other ones. I think there was, I don't know. But I picked up every shitty fucking DC book that I just continued to.
Well, why don't we start with the DC book then that wasn't shitty? In fact, it's probably still my favorite DC New 52 book.
Hmm.
It's
been the same creative team the whole time, hasn't it?
Yeah, this is the 91st consecutive issue with this writing team, not the same artist, but since the book launches, the same artist, since this volume of it. So this is issue 21 of All-Star Western featuring Jonah Hex. With art by Mortat, and the backup story has art by Staz Johnson.
That's a cool name.
I would think that's the only DC book to have the same writers and artist team.
For that long? Oh, probably.
Batman. Since the New 52.
Batman.
But Batman's had fill-ins.
Becky Cloonan did the one issue.
All-Star hasn't had a single fill-in?
Not that I can think of. I don't think so. I'm pretty sure Mortat's done the whole thing.
Action Comics was pretty consistent.
That's a good joke.
Green Team. Green team.
Green
somewhere.
Team, yeah.
That's two.
Not even Katana. Katana already had, like...
Oh, my
it was
God.
By issue 3, it was already different. Same with fucking Constantine.
Really?
Issue 4 was already not even Renato.
Constantine had
rated.
Seven writers before it was even released.
Yeah.
So,
Man, this podcast over the past month has just turned into fuck DC Comics.
That's because DC Comics over the past couple of months has just been like fuck comics in general.
But this, you say, is a very good one, and it's one that I miss.
I have 1.5 DC.
I mean, I would say, here's the thing about Moritat. Yeah, Moritat's been drawing since issue one, and so I'm just going to double check how many issues he's done of this book.
I feel like he's done every issue.
He's done 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yep, he's done every issue.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, the backups have had different artists.
Yeah.
But each backup has had the same artist for each full story. So, like, 3 issues of Barbary Ghost will all be by the same character, same artist. So right now, the backup is Stormwatch, a cool, like, sort of a steampunky Stormwatch where they're fighting vampires and shit,
awesome.
Featuring Dr. 13 and Adam 1. And,
I like Dr. 13.
Yeah, me too. Dr. Terrence 13. But the main story, Jonah Hex, the last couple issues has been Jonah Hex and Booster Gold.
Awesome.
Hanging out in the
Booster
Old West.
Booster Gold just came
Booster
back.
Booster Gold got,
still with him?
No. Booster Gold somehow ended up in the past. He doesn't really know how. He doesn't remember a lot of stuff. And he became the sheriff of this town where this gang that Jonah Hex has been hunting came into town and killed a bunch of people and robbed the bank, basically.
The Moritat panel of Booster Gold with nothing but glee.
It's not glee, it's terror. It's, I gotta turn this wagon! How do I do that?
It looks like he's so excited. He looks like a little kid.
It's a great sequence. Right at the beginning, this issue starts with Jonah and Booster and this one dwarf guy who... one of the people who robbed the banks that they captured.
Midgets?
No, they call him a dwarf in this book, though. He ends up getting shot in the head. But like basically, these bad guys are chasing Jonah and Booster Gold, who are on a wagon, and they end up going over a cliff. Booster's time travel thing kicks in again somehow, launching them both forward in time, but they get somehow separated. So Jonah Hex wakes up in modern-day Gotham City.
Cool.
And he ends up shooting some bad guys who are totally hilarious after he shoots their leader. They actually have dialogue like, King Boss Champion Steak Tube be croaked. We face a serious deficiency of leadership in a time of crisis.
Oh my god.
What do we do? Fight or flight? And then he goes, ah, hell, since you boys seem to be having trouble making decisions, I'll make one for you. Fucking shoots them both.
Aren't those like the mutants from Dark Knight?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Returns.
That's why I'm thinking, I'm not sure if this might... But no, this is definitely 616 DC because after Jonah gets tased by some cops... Sorry, I meant Earth... New, whatever they fucking call
for
it.
For a second there, because Joey knows everything about comics, I actually went,
no,
am I retarded? And I just like, I've been reading DC forever.
No, I'm retarded. I got it backwards. Sorry, guys. Thank you for correcting me, actually. But anyway, Batwing, the new Batwing shows up and fights Jonah Hex, which is kind of cool. And then Jonah Hex ends up in waking up
aren't they
in Arkham Asylum.
Aren't they starting to write Batwing?
Yeah, they've been writing it for a while now. A couple of issues. So at the end of the issue, Jonah Hex is in Arkham Asylum.
You know what I'm doing? As soon as I get home.
Reading this book?
No, I'm going to put that back on my file because I miss that book.
Honestly,
so
I miss that issue book so 19 much. Was the only the WTF issue that was awesome.
Really?
Because it was the first time Jonah that Booster Gold appeared.
Dial
it was
H,
really
what,
good.
What the Flash? Come on.
That was pretty good.
That was excellent.
But that one in particular, this one was really fun.
Yeah,
and the last couple issues with Booster because basically issue 18 was the end of the Jeremiah Arkham story for now.
Yeah.
Because Jeremiah Arkham tries to come with him on this train. And the end of the issue is just Jonah Hex throwing him off of a train, which was funny.
I followed it up until I think like issue 13 or something, and then we were at the shop, and then your file got shorted.
I think
it
was
one.
Like issue 9 or 11. Or
8 or 9.
Early,
it was actually during
early.
Like Night of the Owls, yeah. So I think it was 8 or 9. And then I was like, you can just have my copy, I'll get one later. And then
you
I
never
did, and I'm still behind. And now I'm...
You're
should
like,
I just go pick it? Because I want to read it so bad.
Just
should
get
I just
trades,
get the
dude.
Trades?
Yeah. The backups have been really fun. The backup before this one, Phil Winslade did the art for, and it was a Tomahawk story, and it was unbelievably gorgeous.
Cool.
This Stas Johnson story has been really fun, too. But I think one of my favorites, the Phil Winslade Tomahawk story feels like it could have come out in like a Joe Kubert Presents book from like 1970. It's
cool.
So gorgeous.
You know what?
It.
I think when I dropped it, it was that Tomahawk story, I'm pretty sure.
What's this Batman Arkham Origins thing?
That's a new Arkham game.
The new Arkham game, yeah.
I thought they were going to make another one.
They
I
are.
Mark
it's
Hamill was
prequel.
Done.
Well, it's a prequel.
Yeah. I don't know if Mark
and
Hamill's
I saw,
in it, though.
He's not. I saw a preview for it, and it's a little sad because neither the voice of Batman or...
Kevin Conner's not doing it either?
No.
Nor the Joker are the same.
I don't want to take that journey.
Oh, it's the Joker's still in it, though.
Joker's... Well, I saw a preview with the Joker talking, and it definitely wasn't Mark Hamill, and it wasn't someone even trying to be or sound like Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
So it was a little disappointing. However, it's a video game, which means that the sequel is always going to be better than the predecessor.
Yeah.
When in games like that, especially when they just like perfect it, and then all they do for the sequel is they just expand on that. Like all Arkham City was just better than Arkham Asylum because it was just everything bigger. It was like everything better.
And Arkham Origins Asylum was like the most fun game ever until Arkham City came out.
Arkham Asylum was the second last video game I ever like played seriously.
Was that the game you played on your wedding?
Yeah, I haven't played it since. And the only game I played after that was the first Assassin's Creed that I played for a while, and then I never played any more video games.
Arkham City is probably my favorite video game. Apart from Fallout 3, Arkham City is my favorite video
game. Super Mario World and Monkey Island.
Link to the Past, also.
I like Madden.
Chrono Trigger.
We apparently don't like getting laid.
No.
My pregnant wife just left the room.
It proves nothing.
Yeah.
It's true. I'm not saying
she
could have
just had a big lunch.
And you know, everybody had a nice lunch. Robbie G.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to talk about a book I'm so excited for.
All right. If you must.
So this is the 50th issue of The Unwritten by Mike Carey and Peter Gross. Beautiful cover.
Is this the Fables crossover?
Yeah, and also with Bill Willingham and Mark Buckingham. It's The Unwritten Fables. This is part 1 of 5. And I'm still a little, like, it makes perfect sense in regards to what's going on in The Unwritten. It's not like, oh my god, we need people to pay attention to us, because for a Vertigo book to last issue 50 already simply means that the trades are doing well enough that he can continue to do it monthly. Because I don't think anyone buys this single. Like, when Sweet Tooth was still coming out, I remember the numbers for Unwritten were even less than Sweet Tooth, and they were, like, a little bit above Saucer Country. Mm-hmm. But I know that big box stores and like Chapters and stuff carry all the trades, so the trades clearly do well enough. Anyway, this is one of my favorite series. I rave about this every month. This is a really, really cool story where all the witches and magic users of the Fables universe during the Mr. Dark storyline, they summon the most powerful sorcerer to try and get rid of Mr. Dark, because the last time he was You've read all the Mr. Dark stuff, The last time they got rid of Mr. Dark is they had the most powerful sorcerer at the time or whatever, and they took 1,000 of them or whatever. I can't remember the exact details of it, but they, like, trap him in that box.
Yeah.
So they need another really powerful magic user, and somehow the wires get crossed, and they summon Tom Taylor to their universe. Huh. And it's mostly, the way that it reads is it's mostly, like, if Mike Carey wrote the Mr. Dark storyline, like the Dark Ages kind of stuff of Fables, because it's kind of a parallel universe now. It's not going to the same continuity of what happened in Fables. Like in this, Snow White and the kids are either possessed by Mr. Dark, or they're actually just like, she's actually just banging Mr. Dark, and all the kids are like these weird Addams Family kids that follow him around, and Bigby is a prisoner in the basement. He's like chained up and stuff, and they're trying to feed him human carcasses to try and bring out his dark side. I really love the way that Mike Carey writes the Fables universe, because the way, like, have you read some Unwritten?
I think I read the first trade.
Yeah, and Joey's read a ton of Unwritten.
I read the first 5 trades.
Picture like
yourself on a boat on a river.
Yeah, Mike Carey's like sarcasm, and he's really not pessimistic. What's the word? He's really snarky. It's him writing, where Willingham writes Fables very, like, innocently and almost with, like, an all-ages tone to it. Just occasionally there's adult context in it, but he doesn't swear that much. Mm-hmm. Mike Carey has a way more crass sort of style, and it's him inserting his voice into all these, obviously, public domain characters, but now characters that have been adopted by Willingham, and he's made his own. To hear Mike Carey's voice through Mr. Dark is really cool, especially through Frau Totenkinder. I love hearing his voice through, there was another character that I noticed specifically that made me laugh, through Ozma. Ozma's just such a little dink in this book, like, she's so angry and pissy. Ultimately, like, it has Bill Willingham and Mark Buckingham on the cover, but they contribute 3 pages to this issue.
Yeah.
And it's mostly a story about Outer Haven while the trolls and minions of Mr. Dark are trying to infest Haven.
I like how they still do the borders, though.
Oh, yeah. It's really cool.
That's one of my favorite things.
Peter Gross is one of my favorite artists, and this is just, like, such an unsung sort of book. Like, it's not... raved about as much as I think it should be. Like, it's brilliant. And really cool elements from the Unwritten universe kind of insert themselves into this new timeline of the Fables universe. It's really cool. Like, Richie Savoy is now this crazy vampire bat who is alongside Mr. Dark. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, at the end, they realize that they've made a mistake in summoning the wrong guy, and they've got their lines crossed, so they fix it, and pretty much they summon Tommy Taylor from the books instead of the Tom Taylor version of it, and all of his, like, basically they summon Harry Potter to this universe, and he fights a crazy bat guy. It's a really, really interesting mashup. I think it's going to be a great crossover. The stuff that was going on before, I like a little more, just because it was purely all the Unwritten stuff. And the way that that book really flows is the fact that it's all based on public domain characters. It's all based on, like, all these outer stories that it kind of absorbs.
Yeah.
But in doing this crossover with a universe that it actually shares, like, a publisher with, is a little smaller, I think, even though all the characters are way bigger than that. But when I say it's smaller, I mean it's kind of inserting itself into a very specific part of Fables.
Yeah, like a specific tone to these characters.
Yeah,
like,
and it also throws itself in like a specific trade. Like issues 9, like Rose Red past Super Team is kind of where it is. So like it's inserting itself in a universe that I've already read.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting, and it's reading really funny. It struck me, though, as Mike Carey writing the Mr. Dark story, if he had the option to. And it's really good. And it reads so well. And I actually love it. I loved this issue. I'm excited to see how it pans out, because the way that it ends is really cool.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a Fables fan. If you're if you haven't read Fables, at least up to the end of War and Pieces, then the War and Pieces is so good. Mm-hmm. Then the revelation at the end of this particular issue may be a little lost on you, maybe, but ultimately it's really, really good canon for the Unwritten series. Yeah. And also it was double sized, so there was tons of it. And Mike Carey is one of my favorite writers in comics, and his other book Suicide Risk is really good too.
I
love
it. I'm really happy that this is me being selfish. I'm really happy that the crossover is just in the Unwritten.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember the Great Fables crossover. I was like, "What the fuck's happening? Who are these?"
That's because it was a Jack story.
That was weird. That Great Fables crossover should have only happened in Jack and Literal. Yeah. The three issues that were in Fables shouldn't have been there, because if you really hadn't, because it was a Jack story, and if you hadn't read Jack, you were lost.
Absolutely. I remember my girlfriend Sarah read that, because she read through all the Fables, and she was actually like, I have no idea what's happening. The only thing that's relevant to Fables is that Bigby's there, and he turns into a little girl.
Yeah, it really should have just been the last Jack trade and not the next Fables trade, but I'm sure it sold more because it was a Fables trade.
Jack of Fables was such a great series.
That's what was weird. Like, it would make more sense to me if the objective was to try and boost sales for Jack, but Jack ended like right after that, didn't it? Or pretty soon
there was
after
another
that.
15 issues?
Oh, was there? Okay, never mind. And that's
it ended on
issue
50.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The last issue of it, by the way, of Jack, is basically like a wrestling match, and every page is a full page.
We love wrestling, right?
You guys
would
actually love the last issue of Jack of Fables. Is so funny. It's really great.
You know what? I'm gonna show you right now, because I'm not gonna talk about this book, but in Deadpool this week, Macho Man Randy Savage. The demon, like, he takes all different kinds of shapes. And he transforms into Macho Man Randy Savage and body slams Deadpool face first, but while saying, "Oh yeah."
That's so pretty awesome.
But yeah, and I read that and went,
"I like wrestling." All right.
What book are you going to talk about then?
What book am I going to talk about? I'm going to talk about a book from Marvel Comics, because that's what I do.
You're right, Joey, by the way. The new Vertigo ads are kind of annoying.
Oh, God.
They're kind of annoying.
They're on every page.
They are insufferable. They're horrible ads. They make no sense.
Defy skeptics. Defy boundaries. Defy you.
I like defy you. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Defy genre. What the fuck does that mean?
Anyway,
fuck you,
sorry,
Vertigo.
I was going to have a cool joke when we talked about The Waken. I was going to be like, I know this book's from Vertigo because every other page told me so.
Did you notice the
ad
in
itself?
The Wake for The Wake? I'm like, I already fucking bought your book.
Fuck you.
I'm not going to go buy it again. There were 20 pages of story in that and 14 pages of ads in
really?
The Wake.
Yeah.
Yes. I counted because I was so annoyed.
To be fair,
it's horrible.
Just, I think, like, well, never mind. I'll shut up. I have nothing intelligent to add. You're right, it's stupid.
It's just, it ruined the flow of an
And this I don't even know what it's an ad for.
It's just an ad for Vertigo.
But all the other ones were like, there was Collider, and there was American Vampire.
Let's see this one.
That's not Astro City.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's that's like a vampire. Like it's a...
Yeah, but there was already an American Vampire one.
Well, really?
Can't have more...
That's the American Vampire one.
Yeah. And then there's another ad, and it's just kind of a little silhouette, and I assumed it was Sandman because it was all black and white, but then I realized so were all the other ones, so I don't... Anyway.
I don't know what that is, but I don't...
Advertisements for your own publishing company when you're already buying, like...
Put them at the back.
If you're already buying The Wake, you know what Vertigo is. I mean...
This just totally... First, there's also two fucking ads for 100 Bullets Brothers Lono in there.
Anyway, really, sorry.
So, it's like the worst fucking thing. The story's going to read so good in trade because it's a gorgeous story, but any momentum... Well, I guess we should talk about The Wake right now since we're already on it.
Oh, sorry, right.
I'll
talk about this one right now.
We'll do it next. Let's do The Wake since we're already on it. Fucking the best thing Snyder has written since Severed, easily, bar none. Totally awesome. I can't wait to read it and not have it be like so broken up and choppy.
Severed wasn't my favorite Snyder thing, but I think this is the best thing Snyder's written. The best thing that I've read by Snyder has so far been these first two issues of The Wake. I liked American Vampire a lot more than I liked Severed. I loved Severed, but
I've only
I
read
like
the first trade of American Vampire.
I've read
so
the
far.
First three, and it's
wait,
like
and it is
this one. This one
so
is
good.
The Wake.
Is it?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, look at that. Oh, okay.
Come on now.
So that means
on,
there's more
on
than
now.
One ad for The Wake in The Wake. So there's that one in The Wake, and then like two pages later is The Wake again.
Yeah. Defy fear. In between Brother Lona book or ad.
Somebody outside.
How's your butt?
But yeah, in six pages, there's half of them.
The little dream sequence, though, in The Wake with the super naked lady, that was so creepy.
She
and then he
super
the
naked.
The guy with the neck brace, like about to make out with her, and her face starts transforming into the Wake piece.
Yeah.
Just like,
the whole thing
this
was
is
just so good. I love horror comics.
Sean
doing
Murphy.
A good job.
Sean Murphy is so good.
Yeah.
And I like, I haven't read a lot of Snyder storytelling that does really. Cinematic double page spreads like Bendis stuff, but he does a lot in The Wake now, and also the connecting covers of The Wake are beautiful.
Well, they connect. I didn't even.
Yeah, they do.
You know
what?
But
yeah, I thought it was a really strong issue.
I do know. I'm going to do it anyway. This book is from Vertigo Comics because they told me every other page.
Well, what's interesting? I thought I just mentioned this. The Wake number one was the highest selling Vertigo issue in more than a decade.
Really?
That's awesome.
Wow.
Yep.
I'm so happy. I'm really glad that something like that could happen because when Hellblazer was gone, I was actually like, maybe they're just gonna quit. Like,
now, having said that, the sales for issue one were around 50,000, so
that's still insane.
Still not very good, but
like the last issue of Sweet Tooth sold like maybe 20,000.
Oh, I don't believe it sold 20,000.
You don't?
I
no,
bet you
probably
sold
not.
8,000.
I know Saucer Country at its peak was selling 12,000.
Yeah, like most Vertigo titles lately are selling between 8,000 and 15,000 copies.
See, I'm like, that's a lot. But then it's like, oh yeah,
well,
didn't X-Men number one sell like 1.5 million?
The other thing you got, to remember right now,
1,000?
Like there's maybe a half a dozen books that sell over 100,000 copies in a month. Like the average Marvel and DC book are between 25,000 and 40,000.
Yeah. Talking about sales numbers is boring. This story was not boring at all.
You know who's my favorite character? This cross between
the one who looks like the vulture,
with the
Kraven the
Hunter jacket.
Yeah,
I'm loving.
That's all I can think of.
So the first sequence with the enormous shark eating a mammoth 5 million years ago, and then all the Wake beasts like charging up through the sea was fucking breathtaking. And then the
sharks
main
eat a mammoth.
They will. I have the proof in my hands. The Wake title page for the past two that just shows the creature. Sean Murphy and Scott Snyder are as a creative team.
Fantastic.
Okay. Snyder and Capullo, Snyder and Jock, or Snyder and Francavilla. Well, we haven't read as much Snyder and Francavilla. Or Snyder and Raphael Albuquerque.
Snyder and Francavilla because it's
how about this?
Francavilla.
Okay. Bad question. Because I knew the answer from you. Okay. Snyder and Murphy, Snyder and Capullo, or Snyder and Raphael Albuquerque? Albuquerque
I have
does
only read
American
the first
Vampire.
Trade of I haven't read very much.
Okay, Snyder and Murphy or Snyder and Capullo?
I've only read two issues of Snyder and Murphy.
You haven't read it? Oh, right, because the American Vampire story that it is in
one
third
of you,
trade.
Yeah, sorry. One of you told me what you think, because Snyder Murphy. One of us has an answer.
I've read two Snyder Murphys, and then, like, Batman. That's all I... And I guess Swamp Thing, too, which was...
Snyder and Paquette.
Damn it!
I would take that with all the ones you said. Snyder and Paquette.
Yeah. I like Sean Murphy the best.
I love Sean Murphy.
Every other artist that I've... I think I've read every comic that Scott Snyder has produced.
Gates of Gotham was really good.
Every comic but one. That's the only one. I even read all the Flashpoint stuff. Gotham. I like Sean.
I've read it all. What did he do in
Project
Flashpoint?
Superman.
With Gene Ha. Hated that one.
I loved it.
That was
so
like
good.
The worst. That was one of the worst
it was
miniseries.
Excellent. Really?
I loved it. Granted, I hated 99% of Flashpoint, but that was one of my least favorite miniseries.
That one was one of my favorites.
I fucking did not like it at all.
Hey, you want to know? You want to hear a segue? Right?
Yes.
I like Sean Murphy, but he's not quite my style of art. You know what is my style
What's
of art?
What's your style of art?
Nobody cares!
It's the art team.
Turn it off. Stop recording. We're going home.
We're done. Okay, after many, many technical difficulties, we're back. We jokingly turned off the mic so Ryan couldn't talk, and then everything exploded. And I spent the last 20 minutes trying to learn new software so we can finish this podcast.
So basically, the joke's on you, Joey.
I guess.
Yeah, fuck you!
It was a really funny joke.
Wow, this software's way more sensitive. It's peaking all over the place.
Really? It's just like...
It's peaking and popping. You know what I'm saying?
It's crying. It doesn't like bad words. Should I not swear?
Peaking and popping.
We shouldn't swear anyway because it's just... It shows a lack of imagination.
That's
bullshit.
Such
horseshit. I know. That's so weird. But sorry, Ryan, you were talking about... FF. So why don't you do that?
Okay. I'm going to talk about... Because I've talked about it twice already... There's lots of curvy dots, which is cool. There's a great characterization of Doctor Doom because it's the ultimate, like, arrogant, villainous Doctor Doom.
I love Doctor Doom.
Me
Doctor
too.
Doctor Doom is one of my favorite villains.
Yeah,
all my favorite,
well.
Like, Marvel villains are FF. Or,
really?
Like, Fantastic Four villains. I love Galactus.
Yeah, I love Galactus too.
Doom. Mole Man.
Yeah.
He's fucking awesome.
I like Dragon Man, but he's not a villain. He's just really
Dragon cool. Man. Dragon Man.
Dragon Man was
he
a
is
man.
A dragon.
He's
man.
A Dragon Man.
Tra-da.
And he's Trogdor! The Burninator.
All right.
Trogdor the Burninator.
I think, just to interrupt one more time, I think this episode is going to have good sound quality because this is a higher bitrate. We're recording at a higher bitrate than we were.
That's
previous.
So many bits, Joey.
Yeah.
That's
or
well,
measurement of time.
I've never been recorded in this many bits.
I'm concerned that it might be too high and the podcast will be absurdly huge.
My voice is being immortalized in so many precious bits.
As it should be.
Right?
Mm-hmm. You're worth it.
Right?
You're like JCPenney. Was that JCPenney?
I don't know.
Am like,
I,
you're worth
isn't that a
I thought that was
store?
McDonald's.
Yeah. Oh, maybe.
I thought that was Ford.
It might be, guys.
Let's just name companies that we think it could be.
Like Gerald
Samsonite.
Ford.
Fleshlight.
Is that
Fleshlight.
A company?
Get behind it.
Get into it. It's,
get into it.
It's something we can all get behind.
Anyways. Yeah, this book's awesome. That's awesome. I love this fight with the kids, too, when Bentley 23 comes back. And then they kind of argue and stuff, and they fight people. And also the part with Tong, where Bentley 23 says,
oh, I
you
love
look
that
great.
Bit.
And then... Tong's like, thank you, I am much happier now, while Bentley 23 is still getting the shit kicked out of him by the other kid.
I love that Bentley 23, so like, his whole character since even the Hickman run of FF is that he's like, yeah, I'm a supervillain, I've always been a supervillain, I was born a supervillain, but he still just, like, does nice things, and he's, like, a nice dude.
Yeah.
And during this situation, like, he's actually kind of thrown off by the inhuman child actually kind of being a dick.
Yeah.
Like... I love that he stops in the middle of his battle to compliment Tang. Or Tong.
Tong. Yeah.
Tang is a drink.
Astronauts drink it.
Right.
Yeah, it's also the surname of Pootie. Did you know that Louis C.K. wrote and directed Pootie Tang?
Yeah.
And do you know that I'm going to sign your pity on the run of Khan?
I've never seen Pootie Tang.
It's
I wasn't
not,
going to.
No, do it. It's amazing.
Yes.
You want to see a movie where nothing that makes sense, and not in a good way. I like movies where nothing makes sense. Hot Rod's my favorite movie.
I watched that today.
It's awesome, amazing. But Pootie Tang.
This is my hat now. Hey, look!
I've been drinking
I found
green tea all day.
I've been drinking goddamn green tea all goddamn day. Look, I found some rockets in the bathroom. Would you like to set them off with me? Sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay. Anyways, in the end, with this like tease of Annihilus and Kid Immortus, or just Immortus, and Ravonna and Doom.
Ravonna?
Ravonna? I don't know. It's written. It doesn't
come with a
pronunciation guide.
Oh, jeepers. Dude. Satellite Sam comes out next week. I didn't know that. I'm so excited.
Next week?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa. I think I'm more excited for Sex Criminals.
I'm going to get them both, but Fraction and Chaykin.
Yeah.
You know how much I love
Chaykin. Have you seen Fraction's Twitter account about like stuff Howard Chaykin says?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's so funny.
Boys, yes, I thought I would talk about a couple of books that neither of y'all read.
Okay, do it.
I have two of those. I have five books in total that none of y'all read, but I'm going to do two at once right now. So first one I'm going to do is The Regular Show, number 2. Whoa, yeah. I don't know if you guys are aware, but I'm a big fan of The Regular Show. In fact, I have 8 different covers for the first issue of Regular Show.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But it's Regular Show, written by Casey Green, illustrated by Allison Strejlau. This is part 2. Picks up, remember I told you about last month, where Muscle Man and High Five Ghosts end up creating a mosh pit at a folk concert, which like makes this tempest kind of create. So anyway, they dive in, they connect themselves to ropes and jump into the center of like the weird portal to try and rescue Muscle Man and the High Five Ghost, and they end up having to fight this demon who's been trapped down there forever, who's like this tough looking greaser guy with like a leather jacket on. And they have to fight him to rescue Muscle Man and High Five Ghost, and it's just, it's extremely well done. It's really funny. It feels exactly like it would be a Regular Show episode. The best part, though, is once they defeat the monster and it's getting sucked back into the hole, the monster, as it's getting sucked into the hole, screams, "No! Punk's not dead!" as it's dying.
And I have a friend who would do that when they were dying.
Yeah. And then the backup story is called Wide Awake, where Mordecai and Rigby are going to... I forget where they're going. There's a reason they have to stay up all night. I think they're going to like a signing. Yeah, Danny Reinhoff. He's the star of Lethal Driver Cop, their favorite show, and he's doing a signing at 7 o'clock in the morning. So they decide to try and stay up all night, and they end up having to fight against the Sandman, who's this like big pillow guy made of sand. So this is just them trying to stay awake all night, and they end up fighting the Sandman, and ultimately they can't go anyway because they fill the house with sand, and Benson makes them clean the house.
Benson?
But it's and like hedges. Oh, it's like the best comic. It's so, so, so good. Between this and Adventure Time, I wouldn't have... If I suddenly found myself with only $6 disposable income a month, I could probably survive just on Adventure Time and The Regular Show. Except like it was $4. Okay, let's make it $8.
Okay.
Like, if I only had $8, I could just buy those two comics and I'd be happy. Speaking of things that make me happy, the other one, I'm surprised no one but me actually read this.
I'm going to pick it up the start of next
week. Well, this was the second issue of Adventures of Superman, which collects those digital first one-shots. I actually, overall, I think liked this issue better than issue 1, just because I thought all of the stories were strong, instead of some being stronger than others.
Giuseppe Camicoli drawing Superman is awesome.
Well, he isn't. He's actually doing the layouts, but it's even better, because Giuseppe Camicoli doing the layouts, and motherfucking Sal Buscema did the actual pencils. Like, yeah, Sal Buscema is a legend, like a living legend from the early days of Marvel, who's just fantastic. So it's really cool. It's a very Giuseppe Camicoli type of layout, but yeah, the story, the first story, The Bottle City of Metropolis, which was really cool, a really fun little story. J.M. DeMatteis wrote that.
I love J.M. DeMatteis.
He's doing art, please, isn't he? Him and Keith.
Yeah.
Then
really
the
funny.
Next story, which I think was probably my favorite one in the issue, which was basically like a Lois and Clark competing to get the best story called Slow News Day, which was written by Joshua Hill Fialkov, and Joelle Jones did the art.
Joelle Jones is amazing.
Yeah, and this story was so good.
You're reading Helheim, aren't you?
If they ever stop,
you'd love Helheim.
If they ever stop the shitty New 52, Joshua Hill Fialkov would do an awesome real Superman. Instead of the bullshit.
He's a really, really, really good writer.
He is.
I really like everything.
He is pretty good.
Written by, or read
I've
by.
Only I only read some of his iVampire stuff, which was awesome. And I know I've read other stuff by him, but I can't think of it.
He's done like he did the Alpha miniseries.
I didn't read that.
Big Time or whatever, but he's done
time.
A lot of stuff. Yeah. Peter Gabriel.
I'm on my way, I'm making it. And then there's
Big
a totally
time.
Kick-ass like cosmic fun time story called Best Intent, written by Brian Glass and Mike Olving, and art by Mike Lenoming, and it's pretty sweet. It's very Kirby-esque. Lenoming is pretty Kirby-esque, but a lot of the type of action and the type of characters they're fighting, it's pretty cosmic. A lot of fun.
Yeah, this was one that I
far out.
Put back.
I dug it.
I put back on the shelf this week just because there was like 30 copies on the shelf, and I knew it wasn't going to... I'd be able to pick it up next week because 30 books was just too many.
Really, really good, though.
It's weird for me
to
not pick up a Superman book, though. Like,
it is weird.
You know what? If I was picking up any Superman book, it'd be that one.
And it's great because it's real Superman, and there's no continuity to worry about.
Matt Kent has a story coming up. Pretty
really?
Good. Yeah.
Is he drawing it, too?
No.
I don't know who's drawing it. All of his DC stuff, he's writing a lot of like random bits and bobs and shit.
Yeah, he's doing one of the enemies.
He's doing three of them. He's doing... Deadshot, Harley Quinn, and Solomon Grundy. Like, one of the best spy writers in comics today, and you just throw three random C-list villains at him, it's like, okay.
Especially like the Earth 2 Solomon Grundy, it's like,
it's not even Solomon Grundy in the 616 DC. Just kidding. He does like the Earth 2 Solomon Grundy, which I'm not going to read Earth 2 anymore because James Robinson is leaving.
Yeah, and it wasn't apparently a good thing.
Yeah. He's like hasn't said anything because apparently he's a professional. What the fuck is this?
Yeah,
professionalism.
Steven Segovia did
the art for the Matt Kent story.
Oh, okay, cool.
I want when people leave a job, I want them to like harm in it.
Yeah.
Actually, the whole issue is it's just one story in the next issue because it's a three-parter, and so all three parts of it.
Excellent.
So it's a book-length Matt Kent.
Ooh. Matt Kent. Ooh. I'm going to stay on Justice League of America through Trinity War because I'm curious, and definitely after Trinity War. That's what I'm most excited for because Matt Kent takes over for five issues. And he's just writing like Martian Manhunter stuff. And so far, the best part by far is the Martian Manhunter backups. And it goes the same for this week as well.
You feel that way about that like I do about the Shazam stuff in Justice League, right?
Yeah. And then this week's Justice League was
Can
all
I see your Justice League? Because I saw a picture online of the end of with Billy Batson thing that made me happy.
Yeah, no, it was really good.
Just because I want to see the other...
The newest Justice League.
They introduced all the other
characters.
Yeah, like
all
the rest of the
Marvel
family. That's
really
good.
Fun, actually.
Really?
Hey, since we're talking about Superman, I'll just mention this news that come November, I'll be able to buy Action Comics again when Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter take over.
Can't wait. I am so excited.
Yeah, it's going to be sweet.
This was a really... The Justice League, Geoff Johns, Gary Frank that ends Shazam was a lot of fun.
Oh, so Shazam stuff is done now?
That's his big Shazam story, so it's not going to be a backup anymore. I don't know what they're going to do with Shazam. They're probably going to give it a book or so. I don't know.
I hate that he's not just called Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But I understand why he's not. Yeah. It's not DC's fault.
Being that you're talking about Greg
Pak,
Superman.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Isn't it excellent? Gary Frank is the best.
So Mary Marvel, and I guess that's supposed to be like Captain Marvel Jr. And I don't know who any of these people are other than Mary
the Tiger.
Marvel.
The Tiger shows up.
Talkie Tawny's in this one?
Talkie Tawny's so
But there's always like little references to it because it's like I'm Billy Batson and I'm a dick and I'm gonna go walk by this tiger.
Yeah, but
and
then he
Freddy is Captain Marvel Jr.
But then the tiger actually fights in this and like rips the shit out of Black Adam. I think.
Aww,
this looks really awesome.
Black Adam's
Gary
a dick,
Frank
man.
Is so good.
Gary Frank is amazing, and Gary Frank with Geoff Johns makes me love Geoff Johns that much more.
Does Talkie Tawny actually talk, or is he just a tiger?
In this one, he's just a tiger.
That sucks. He should. His name is Talkie Tawny, for Christ's sakes.
Well, it's a really action oriented issue, so there's not really that much.
They're trying to introduce like Golden Age nonsense to a modern audience. I get it. It just bums
his
me
name
up.
Is Talkie Tawny, and not because he's half of a clock.
Fucking
Christ, man! What is your damage?
Speaking
little boy?
Of Greg Pak rating Batman, and we weren't doing that. So, speaking of Greg Pak rating Superman. The new 52 number one Batman Superman by Greg Pak and
J.J.
and
both.
Oliver. Oh my goodness! Mm-hmm. I think I like this issue way more than both of you liked it. But
I liked it a lot.
You guys liked
good.
It a lot. I loved this issue. I thought it was excellent.
I thought that through no fault of its own, really, just by virtue of the fact that it's a part one of a story, it felt very much like not enough of it. Like it felt like there wasn't enough here for it to feel like a story.
Yeah,
I know it's part one. But I don't know. I just wish I had a little bit more, so it felt a little bit more all its own. But the double page spread title page is unbelievable,
isn't it?
The Crossworld one. Well, I love it because it has the Superman shield and the Batman logo mm-hmm. in it. Like, it's so cool.
I really thought that the way that he had dual narratives in it, where he had Clark kind of his inner monologue juxtaposed on Bruce's, and the way that they, I really appreciate the fact that. He captured both the, like, the spirits of the characters perfectly.
I think he did a well good job, yeah.
In the sense, yeah, like, ultimately they both have the exact same end that they want to reach, but their attitudes surrounding it are so vastly different, and it makes them such interesting foils for each other. It makes them, like, a lot of Bruce's exposure to the world and his catalyst for being what he is based in darkness, is based in, rooted in, like, unhappiness and not being satisfied with the world, whereas Clark, in the first page, in that double page spread of Crossworld, where he's talking about growing up on the farm and always being Jonathan Kent's boy, that was one of my favorite lines, too. I've got another home, too, but let's be honest, I'll always be Jonathan Kent's boy. I was like, aww.
I agree with all those things you said. I just thought, other than that page, we hardly got any of that.
I really dug it. For the rest of it, when they first interact on, like, the park bench and everything, and then also the way that Batman is like thinking ahead of how what's going on in regards to Catwoman, what's going on in regards to one of his employees stealing some of his technology, and then when Superman shows up in that beautiful page where he just crashes through the room. And you'd think that it'd be like a really dark kind of Jay Lee version of it, and he still just looks like the big blue
Boy Scout. He looks cool. I think there was just so much confusion about what was actually going on in this issue.
You thought so? Oh no, I.
Yeah, well, you have no idea what's actually happening. Like, you don't know when this happens or to whom or where or what is going on.
Well, we know that this is before Superman and Batman have formed the Justice League. It's the first time that they've met. You can also tell just because...
Except that the ending where they don't...
But that's because they get transported to this weird time. That's why Ben Oliver takes over in the art.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you go from, like...
Yeah, that's fair. No.
There's no explanation. Like, we don't understand that at all. Like, you figured out only because Batman's costume is different. That's the only reason I would understand that that's what happened.
At the beginning, they don't understand each other. They don't recognize each other. They don't know that each other is a superhero.
That's why it's confusing when all of a sudden Bruce knows his name is Clark and all that stuff.
Well, at the beginning, Catwoman is possessed, and then you see this crazy demon exit her face and then go into both Superman and Batman. And then from that, they enter a completely different reality, and also from the fact that they're fighting in Metropolis, and then all of a sudden a bright light shines, and then he falls into Smallville.
I understand that's what happens. Like, I know that they're not in Gotham anymore. I understand that that's what happens.
But they're in a different timeline too.
Presumably because it ends where it does, and there's no resolution. Not that there needs to be a resolution, but, like, there's just so much confusion, and it's not particularly cohesive. It'll probably read really well with more than one issue, but. At the moment, it's just kind of puzzling.
I thought it was a good kind of puzzling, though. I thought that it wasn't annoying or frustratingly puzzling. I thought it was intriguing.
Especially, I mean, I'm mildly intrigued, yeah. I'm going to read the next one. I like Greg Pak. I like the way he's written each character. I just don't think that this story feels like a story at all at this moment. It just kind of feels like a bunch of chaos while the characters are just sort
of... It feels like the first chapter of a story to me. And that's how comics are made.
Thanks.
So
it didn't feel that way to me, but I still
liked
it. I love
this issue. I thought it was great.
It was okay.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was okay. I thought that he has a good handle on the characters, but not a story as of yet, which is fine. I mean, I'm willing to be patient and wait for it. I'm just saying that's why I can't give this single issue as high as a review as you, just because... Character-wise, he's doing pretty well, but storytelling-wise, it doesn't feel like there's much going on yet. Hmm. I'm definitely getting the next one.
I'll probably get the next one. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I love Greg Pak, I love Jay Lee, and I thought Ben Oliver did a great job, too. I like Ben Oliver doing Supes. I'm not 100% sold on Jay Lee's Supes, just because it's... Not because he doesn't look happy, just because he looks, like, so pale and sickly. It's just his style, it doesn't work as well for me on Superman. his Clark Kent was pretty great. I was actually pretty pleased. I think also part of it is just because of Jay Lee's style. Even the stuff in Gotham, it doesn't feel like it's in Gotham. It feels like it's in like
a Tim Wonderland, Burton
like a Tim Burton, exactly, and not like.
Not a
Tim Burton Batman movie.
Hot
like,
Topic way, but...
In, like, Alice in Wonderland Tim Burton, not the gothic Gotham City Tim Burton.
The stuff in Metropolis felt like it was in Gotham City.
That's what I meant,
pretty
yeah.
Dark.
Yeah, like when they're fighting Catwoman on that clock and stuff, which was cool.
Well, it's just because it's night out and you really don't see the landscape at all.
Just
you see,
the
like,
yeah,
there's
the
no
thing with the tree. That tree the kids are playing in front of, is that in Gotham or is that in Metropolis? That's
that
in Metropolis.
Was in Gotham.
Okay.
Wait.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was in Gotham.
Is there a sun in Gotham City?
Yes, there is.
Rarely.
But yeah, no, I liked it. I'm going to get the next one. I look forward to it getting better, too. And I think that once it's all complete, it'll feel a lot better, too. Cool.
Did I talk about... Oh, well, it's
my time to shine.
I'm going to talk about one that Robbie just read and it broke his heart.
I'm going to talk about Captain America issue
right?
8.
We had
Rick
Remender
and John Romita Jr.
There's no way that they would have allowed this character to make it into the mainstream universe and mess up everything.
That's what I was curious about.
I honestly felt like it would be like, oh, Cap is back in the 616 and blah blah blah, and time passes differently, so don't worry, it hasn't been like 14 years, and everybody else just stays behind. They're like, we're gonna start a new
life. I was gonna assume it was like the storyline would end like Toy Story 3, where Cap moves on.
Yeah,
from his son.
And Ian gets left with a new child to play with.
Yeah.
I just honestly, I didn't necessarily think this was how it was going to end, but I was pretty... Okay, we're going to spoil this. Spoiler alert! Ian, the son of Zola / Cap, gets shot in the fucking head.
By Sharon Carter.
With a
but
shitty
the fact that he
grin on
her face. Yeah.
Idiot.
So he dies. And I'm not going to lie, I expected this kid to bite it eventually, because I'm just like... There's no way that they're going to all of a sudden introduce Cap's son into the mainstream universe without messing up all the continuities of other books, and they care about that kind of thing. So I knew that he wasn't going to make it out of this series alive, but I didn't think this is how it was going to happen. But I have to say it's ingenious.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, talk about setting up some conflict. The woman he loves, who he hasn't seen in 15 years, who to her has been like 5 minutes, just shot his son.
Yeah, Jesus. Rick Remender has... made this book.
Like, it's a great book.
His own in so many ways, and it would be
There's a ton of it.
I love it. That's why I love Remender so much. I love that exposition style. I love the inner monologue style. Like, that's why Hellblazer is my favorite book ever, because that's all it is.
Yeah,
it's like a guy thinking, and you can read it. It's pretty cool.
I like it. I, you know,
it was such a.
I like the story more than I like the execution of it. I guess you could say.
So just I don't agree with that.
I like dialogue and stuff.
I was just going to say, like, I really am enjoying this series. Rick Remender's a great writer. Cap's a cool character. The story is great. But there are three words to explain why this is so fantastic, and they are John Romita and Jr.
I 100%
agree. Oh,
I love
God, this is, like, the best fucking Romita stuff ever.
Spectacular.
Oh, it's just John Romita being like, all right, I'm going to do Kirby stuff. And he's doing it so well.
I'm sad that he's not going to be on the rest of it. I like Carlos Pacheco.
I love Carlos Pacheco, so I'm fine with it. And I love that he did this whole storyline.
I like that he did this whole storyline. I'm going to miss him, though.
Yeah, me too. But that just means he'll be on to something else awesome that I can buy.
Yeah,
Kick-Ass
some shit.
There isn't going to be a Kick-Ass 4.
I wasn't reading it anyway.
Unless you count Kick-Ass 3 as Kick-Ass 4, because there was a Hit Girl miniseries, too.
Wank, wank, wank.
I haven't read any of the Kick-Ass stuff. I just like John Romita.
I read Kick-Ass and it was whatever. And then I read half of Kick-Ass 2 and I was like, this is fucking stupid.
It's weird. Like, I'm not the biggest fan in the world, but I am clearly the biggest Mark Millar fan at this table.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which is strange.
100%.
Well, and see, I like some of the stuff. I like Civil War. I really like Civil War. And on top of that, I really like Supercrook.
If either of you guys read his run on Adventures, on Superman Adventures, you would adore it. You would become a Mark Millar fan just by virtue of how amazing his Superman is. Superman Adventures. It was like the out-of-continuity cartoon Superman, the one based on the animated series.
Cool.
And fuck, it's spectacular. It's so good.
I love
he
good
nails
stuff.
It.
I love
and
nailing
it. You would
things.
Love it because you love Superman.
I do
and
love
it's
Superman.
So much fun.
I
love
Superman
it.
I love the most. Speaking of Civil War... What happened to Steve McNiven on Guardians of the Galaxy? Why did he only do 1.5 issues and now it's just so much? I'm not complaining. Yeah, Sarah Pacelli's awesome. Brilliant.
Yeah.
But, like, that book was heralded as Bendis and McNiven did a book and a half.
McNiven is pretty famous for not being able to put out a book a month.
Oh, yeah?
Well, you remember Civil War. Yeah. Remember how, like, Civil War took forever.
Yeah.
And that was when people were bitching. I mean, but that was back when I was like, good, because it means that Civil War will have one artist.
Yeah.
Hey, is it just me or does Drax the Destroyer really look like Dave Bautista here? That's all I kept thinking this whole time.
So let me ask you guys a question, because I read a review of this book online today.
I haven't read it.
Okay, let me ask you a question, Ryan.
Yes.
Because it looks pretty fun, but I was reading some reviews of it. They were all saying, look, it's a really fun story that it's frustrating because... And even though I'm sick of hearing the D word, we've been talking about
DX,
about Bendis decompressed, because they're saying like this is the fifth issue of this book and it feels like it is taking forever to get anything, to get anywhere. Like, it feels like it should still be issue two.
You know, I don't know. I don't really feel of like the that. Three that I read, like I felt it covered enough. Well, maybe it's just because I read everything Bendis and I'm so used
you're
to
used
him
to
taking
his style. Yeah,
forever.
Yeah, it's definitely
tell a story.
He's doing a slow burn.
Yeah,
definitely
it's not,
doing that.
I mean,
it's
I'm not opposed to it because I've read his slow burns before that are really good.
This book specifically, again, I've only read the first three, so you would know more than I would, Ryan. But
not much. You want to know what happens to this one? Gamora and Tony Stark fuck, and then he feels bad, so he calls Pepper Potts later.
Oh, okay.
And then there's a bar fight.
Sweet. So far, this book has promised to be one thing, and it was exactly that for me. It was like, we are going to make a cosmic adventure story with lots of laser gun battles.
And a
talking raccoon and a plant.
Yeah.
And that's all it's been, and that's awesome. Like, the first three issues were, including the zero, or the point one, or whatever, like, they were a blast. What really ultimately needed to happen? I mean, it was Guardians of the Galaxy. There was a cosmic threat coming down to Earth. They're going to protect Earth.
Yeah.
Do they? Yeah, it was sweet. Was there lots of, battles in space? Yeah. One of my favorite ones where, like, Groot just charges through the wall of a spaceship and everyone's flying everywhere. And then when Rocket Raccoon just runs around going, bang, you're dead. Bang, you're dead. Yeah. Bang, killed you. Bang, killed you. I don't know. There doesn't need to be.
No.
This isn't exactly a book that I would seek out for story. I mean, the front cover is a lady with a giant gun shrieking while an explosion happens behind her. It's a blockbuster movie. Like, it's a blast. It's really fun.
This is the issue with the least storyline progression, but there's still like quite a bit. It's definitely more about like, hey, remember how Iron Man's here? This is kind of a reminder of why.
I always forget that Iron Man's there.
See, that's one of the reasons. Like, I've learned long ago, I think Bendis is a great writer. I like his comics, but I know with me, I have to read his stuff in either a collection or like 10 issues at once, because otherwise I get to the end of an issue and I'm mad. Like, I really like Age of Ultron, the ending of it. After follow up from last week, the last five issues of Age, I have the opposite opinion of Rob. The first five issues of Age of Ultron are mediocre to poor, and the last five are awesome. But
I have to read it.
I know that.
No, you don't.
The way he writes comics, if I read them month to month, drive me mental, because
that's why a lot of the Marvel stuff is good for him, because like two of his books.
Yeah,
are out a month,
but I need to read like 10 to feel like I got a satisfaction.
All New X-Men has a lot of story happening in it, but it's on issue 13, and maybe that's why it seems like there's a lot of story, because ultimately it's just a lot of talking, and it's really funny, but it, especially this newest one, was a lot of Iceman being quippy.
Like, I don't want to be the dickhead who always goes back to the Silver Age, but if you look at Ultimate Spider-Man, the Peter Parker origin story in Ultimate Spider-Man is 6 issues long.
Yeah.
It's 12, it's like 4 pages long when Stan Lee did it. Now, obviously, I know it's different. Of course, it's not going to be a 4-page Stan Lee thing, but I'm just saying, like, it takes him 6 22-page issues to do Spider-Man's origin story. It's really good, but if I was reading that month to month, I'd be like, fuck!
See, now,
get on with it!
The thing, I follow every Bendis book, modern Bendis book right now, and he reminds me of, how prolific the guy is because he's the Kevin Smith of comic books. It's because he tells the exact same amount of story as anyone else. He just doesn't shut the fuck up. Like, Powers, one of my favorite creator-owned books, but that's because of the dynamic between all the characters, because all it is banter. All All New X-Men is banter. All Uncanny X-Men is banter now in this hell dimension. All Guardians of the Galaxy is banter. Even if that banter is just a giant plant going Groot and then a raccoon running around.
In fairness, banter set over like a giant space fight.
Yeah, so. It's action banter. Yeah. Like, what other books are he... Like, well, that's kind of why I like Bendis. Yeah. Because he is the Kevin Smith of comic books. He does not shut the fuck up.
Ultimate Spidey's
and
a
he's
little
funny. Ultimate
different.
Spidey. Well,
Ultimate Spidey. I feel like
nothing
happened. I feel like a lot happened.
The first. I love that book. Again, that book's great. The first six issues, though, he's not even really Spider-Man. Like,
he
goes invisible at the end of the first one, and then from that point, it's him going, "I hope my parents don't find out I have invisible powers." And like,
that's kind of been the plot.
And then the past two issues, he hasn't been Spider-Man either. Like, he hasn't put on the suit. And the one right after Venom War is him talking with his dad at a Chinese food restaurant.
Yeah,
that's all that happened in that one. And then at the end, something exploded. Hmm. Like, I love that book. That's probably my favorite Bendis superhero book.
Yeah.
But again, because of all the reasons that I just said, those aren't complaints. Those are reasons I like Bendis.
Yeah.
They're the same reasons I like listening to Kevin Smith. He talks in circles and just banters and blathers on about nonsense, and I'm entertained. Mm-hmm. I think it's great.
I like Bendis. Speaking of Kevin Smith, quickly, I saw that you listened to the Fat Man on Batman, the Superman review, and you and Ralph Garman are the same human being.
Pretty much. Yeah. Ralph Garman is... pretty much 100% right, although I think he liked the movie more than I did.
Yeah.
I love Kev, but like, he's out to lunch on his explanation for why it's okay that they changed, why they did the movie the way they did. Like, he's totally crazy.
I think his explanation's fine.
His explanation is like, well, it's because it's a modern era. It's like, it's not a good excuse.
You've got to capture the imagination in the modern era.
So it's just like, yeah, I mean, some of his explanations are just dopey, but whatever. I have a few more. What else we got? Let me hit you with a couple more that only I read real quick.
Stop reading. Okay.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 23 by Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz and Bobby Curnow with art by Matthias Santoluco. So in the last issue...
Matthias Santoluco.
In the last issue, Leonardo got captured by Splinter.
He did Dial H.
Yeah, this is really good work too in this book. Gets captured by Splinter, and so this whole issue is sort of like Leonardo's kind of being like deprogrammed by Splinter. He's trying to get turned against Splinter in that. The other cool thing is there's a few splash pages that are done by different people. So like, there's a Ross Campbell one, there's an Andy Kuhn one, there's a Kevin Eastman one, and then the main storyline is told is the Scant Pantaluco stuff is an Andy Kuhn sequence here. Anyway, it was really really good. And the rest of the Turtles and Splinter have gone... Oh, and Casey Jones is in the hospital, and the rest of the Turtles and Splinter have gone and teamed up with Old Hob, of all people, to go and try and fight fucking Splinter in that shit. So it's continuing to be a really good comic. I like that song, too. Adventure Time number 17. Pendleton Ward created the book. Ryan North writing, Shelley Paroline and Brayden Lamb. I continue to like this comic more than I actually like the TV show. And I love the TV show.
Or Adam, my roommate, just got a very cool watch. Guess what time it always is
Adventure
on his
Time?
Wrist.
Is it Adventure Time?
It's always Adventure Time.
Newfound Glory had an Adventure Time t-shirt.
That's good.
On tour. And
so this issue continues leaves off from the last issue where... Finn and Jake have teamed up with Ice King to go on an adventure in an ice dungeon that Ice King made. And
Ice
beginning
King in NWA.
Yeah. And they fight Fisho, the colossal ice dungeon boss. You're such an idiot. Anyway, in this issue they end up finishing Ice King's dungeon and then going into the Nightosphere's Nightmarosphere, which is a further dungeon that was created by Marceline's father. And it's just kick-ass and awesome. This book is always the most entertaining comic in the world. I love it.
That's not kick-ass, that's Adventure Time.
And the backup... Shut up. And the backup is called Silly String Theory by Jay Hosler, and it involves Finn and Jake guarding Peebles' Silly String.
Peebles?
Peeble. It's what they call Princess Bubblegum. And then Finn ends up chewing it like gum and... blowing a bubble that's full of stars. It's like a universe, and they have to fight this broccoli monster who wants to destroy it.
Of course.
So great. And it also ends with the best line ever. Science is spooky cool, brother. It's bioluminescent. Fist bump. End of comment.
Is it funny that when you mistakenly said spience, I just assumed that that's actually what was being said in Adventure Time?
It's
Adventure Time.
It's KGB physicists.
Okay, now this one narrowly avoided being my number one.
Narrowly got out of the way.
Hoax Hunters Case Files. So it's kind of like an annual, but it's just a bunch of other creative teams doing short little few-page stories set in the Hoax Hunters universe.
I love Hoax Hunters.
So we have a story written by Tim Seeley with art by Clint Helinski, which is totally like a 90s X-Men parody.
Oh, Clint.
Of the... and it ends up realizing that it's the previous Hoax Hunters, and the main character's father was a Hoax Hunter, so it's like a comic based on his adventures.
Oh, cool.
And it was really fun. Then there's a story written by Eric Burnham with art by Keith Burns, which was really cool. Murder is my favorite character, by the way. He's a...
Murder of Crows?
Yeah, he's a bunch of crows in a spacesuit. Then there was a story called The Quantum Brain, Steve Seeley and Ryan Brown, and it's really, really good. Yeah, this is an awesome story as they go through all these different dimensions and their art. The art style kind of changes depending on what dimension they're in. And there's one panel that's actually drawn by Steve Seeley, and it's just like lined paper with stick figures on it.
That's why I stopped. I took Bedlam out of my file. But because the Ryan Brown art that I think is the best kind of art is when he's drawing wacky, fun stuff. And Bedlam... Well, and as
his story.
And as great a job as I think he does mimicking Rosmo, I just feel as though like Ryan Brown is... Yeah. Better than mimicking someone else.
That's so odd.
Yeah, that's like, my point. Awesome. He mimics a bunch of art styles, including Mike Allred in one panel, which is wicked.
That gives me hope that my drawings can appear in a comic book one day, because that's my drawings, the stick figures.
Then there's a really fun story that's like a clearly if Superman existed in the Hoax Hunters universe, which was really great. Then, Nick Pitara story. Mm. The premise being the Hoax Hunters go to visit Bill Murray because of all the weird shit Bill Murray's always doing. And the whole, like, no one will believe you. Tim Daniel and Nick Pitara did this story. And it turns out that Bill Murray is actually a whole bunch of Bill Murrays. And they've been told that they're not allowed to keep doing... Yeah, and Truman.
Harry
from...
Truman.
But there's, like, the clown Bill Murray. Caddyshack Bill Murray. Bill Murray from Broken Flowers.
Steve Zissou?
Bill Murray, yes. Yep, Steve Zissou's there. Ghostbusters Bill Murray. Groundhog Day.
Operation Dumbo Drop.
The Bill Murray from that bowling movie that I like. Kingpin.
I love Kingpin.
Stripes Bill Murray. And it's all like... All of them are saying their dialogue.
That is the coolest
thing. And it's just
them
saying, like, you are not... And like the deal that she makes with him at the end, so that he agrees that they'll let him continue to live on Earth, but he has to stop being weird, and because people are starting to think of the legend of Bill Murray. And she's like, the deal, he has to talk to her and say that, who's your friend? Who's your buddy? I am, aren't I? With heart, you're crazy about me, aren't you? Like it was the first time. Cinderella story out of nowhere. Former green skipper, now about to become the Masters. It was so awesome.
Now, Bill Murray...
And then there's one more story, Michael Moreci and Brian Level.
Now, I love Brian Level.
Me too. It's a
now,
great story.
Bill Murray is probably my favorite comedian. But have you noticed that it's like a cool thing to like have him on t-shirts and stuff now? And like,
yeah, because that's what this whole story is about, basically.
Yeah, I was driving behind a truck today and it had a decal on the back of it that was the silhouette of Bill Murray looking at you. And then I've seen several shirts that are just his face with wearing 3D glasses. And I'm like, that's awesome, but he's a fashion statement.
You know what it's from? You know what the Chive is?
Yeah.
No.
It's like a website where they basically just, it's either posting like pictures that are funny. Some of them are. Some of them aren't. Some of them are, though. Majority of them are. And then pictures of like boobs and butts.
I like
it's
all
an
of
ultimate,
those things.
It's an ultimate bro, like, bro website.
Okay. I'm investigating it now.
They do some like funny stuff.
Lots of memes.
This is a guy standing on top of a Ferris wheel. That's just terrifying.
It's lots of like, and then there's tons of pictures of like just like neat pictures, and they sell shirts that have like Bill, like the Bill Murray 3D glasses shirt. That's like them, and I think Bill Murray like has done photo shoots and shit with them too.
That's kind of cool.
This is just like a photo of a girl down her top.
Yeah, that's. They do like. FLBP, which is Future Lower Back Problems, which is girls with big boobs.
That's kind of funny.
They do Burn Your Bra Wednesdays, I think. Okay. Stuff like that, where it's just girls with no bras on.
Oh, that's what this is. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, and then...
Oh, okay.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It's
like... Well, you don't like tits? Well, you like boys?
There's
callback
to
the old days.
Yeah, there's an app, and I actually have it on my iPad, because there's a lot of, there's, like, usually some good memes.
They have a picture of, like, a flip-flop shoe, and then Sylvester Stallone saying, "You betrayed the law!"
Yeah.
Judge Dredd.
See, somebody,
what did he
a
say
lot of those, Judge Dredd? What's that line that he says?
"You betrayed the law."
"You
betrayed the law!"
He has a stroke mid-sentence, like...
"You betrayed the law!"
I love Rob Schneider in that movie.
I'm not
Rob Schneider's great.
Should I do a couple?
Yeah,
let's talk about what you've got in front of you, because I loved it.
Okay.
Wait, did you want to do something else? I'm sorry.
I was going to do a couple of stuff, but...
Let me try the law. Oh, let me try the law. This episode is called "You Betrayed the Law." Sorry, go ahead, Ryan.
So everybody's having a stroke.
You betrayed the law.
Okay, let's talk about this book here.
Okay,
talk about this little guy. This is Daredevil issue 27 by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. The always amazing Chris Samnee, which I love that they're both credited as storytellers.
They have been for a while now. Yeah. And actually, Mark Waid was talking about that on Twitter because of so many additions that he's made to it. Like, they have such a fantastic working relationship together that it's just like he insisted that they be credited as storytellers, co-storytellers.
There was another Marvel book I read this weekend. I can't remember what it was, but it was the artist was credited as like something other than an artist. I can't remember, but it was awesome. Yeah.
Plumber.
This is the culmination of 27 issues.
Yeah.
Because this really puts an end to pretty much everything, I'm assuming. I mean, the big reveal last issue was Bullseye is the guy in the metal.
That was cool.
Which was very cool. And they basically do away with him. Daredevil more or less defeats Ikari.
That was really cool, too.
That was really cool.
This whole sequence where they lead you to believe that like Foggy and Karen McDuffie and his employees
they're
and
Nelson
Ruck, they're all being followed, but it's actually like Iron Fist, who needs a book, Ant-Man, Spider-Man and Black Widow are the ones that are following them to keep them safe.
I have my friends there too.
Yeah,
so have I. And that whole thing with the telescoping rod where you think he's gonna do old school Matt Murdock and be like before the Mark Waid run where he would have just stabbed Bullseye in the face with a stick. And then just have that great moment. I was like, oh, it never occurred to me that he actually had a point in the other way and he was going to take out a car. Oh, that was so great. Yeah. God, I love this book.
Yeah, it's...
This also marks, if you include the four issues they did on Rocketeer, the 17th issue in a row that Mark Waid and Chris Samnee have done together.
Really?
Yeah, they've done 13 consecutive issues of Daredevil together.
This might be one of my favorite creative teams.
Well, and then Mark Waid, because like today, Samnee was tweeting, like, this is like our 13th and 17th if you count the Rocketeer book. And Mark Waid goes, okay, only 298 more to go. Because it sounds like he wants to just work with Samnee forever.
Yeah. Well, did you see
the perfect combination?
The way it showed their writing process in the last issue, there was matter where the script is so loose because it seems like Wade's like, you know what? You kind of know what I'm thinking anyway, apparently. And then all the structures of pages is just perfect.
Listening to Mark Waid talk like writing craft on podcast is one of the most interesting and awesome things ever. Like just the way he describes working with different types of artists and the different ways you write comics depending on who you're working with.
Yeah. If I could only follow two Marvel books,
this would be one of them.
This would be one of them.
Definitely.
I know what the other one would be, I think.
I think you know too.
But yeah, anyways, this entire 27 story issue arc seems to be over with the final page being "I think you're fearless," and it's the coolest.
That was
like,
great.
This book's so good.
It is.
And it's going to keep on going. I can't wait.
Yeah. And like all it was missing to be the like
it
most
double ships next month.
Does it?
Yeah.
Well, it's Javier Rodriguez is doing art on both of them, I believe.
Oh, Samnee's not there?
No, he's taking a break.
Must be catching up.
It's in the back here. Yeah, Samnee's having a kid.
Oh, because he's having a kid.
Yeah, our regular colorist, Javier Rodriguez.
So, does that mean Samnee's... Can I just see that?
Yeah.
Does it say if he's coming back? He must be, right?
Yeah,
he will be, absolutely.
The only thing that was missing from this being the ultimate heartwarming tale, like the complete opposite of Cap, is that you never hear what happens with Foggy's cancer.
Yeah.
Although I'm assuming it's a comic book. It'll be like, he's cured.
Guys, I'm going to tell you a piece of news before we go on to our favorites, I guess. Unless you have anything else.
I have a couple I wanted to talk about.
Okay, we'll do that. Yeah. Oh, I thought that was your favorite. Sorry, Rob.
No.
Okay. I just want to point out, this is very exciting for me anyway. I imagine, Rob, you might care. I'm not sure how Ryan will feel. Beginning, July 13th issue of Shonen Jump, which is the 45th anniversary of that magazine. It will feature a brand new manga series by Akira Toriyama.
That's awesome.
Right? Ginga Patrol Jacko is new series. Akira Toriyama, of course, of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z.
The last Akira Toriyama thing that I read was Sandland, and Sandland was awesome. Good, yeah.
This would be his first work since 2010's one-shot Kintoki. So, yeah, I mean, I'll get the volumes when they come out. I'm not going to buy Shonen Jump, but yeah. That's pretty sweet. I mean, then, really again, sweet. This is the Japanese release, so I don't know when the English version will come out, but still. Woo!
I love Akira Toriyama. Cool. I reread those Dragon Ball Z books like, they're so much fun. At least once every couple years. They're fantastic.
I'm going to have to borrow them again one day.
Do it.
I own half of them.
You do. But we have joint custody of them, even though I just keep them at my house.
Yeah, they come over on weekends. They come over on weekends. I drink beer and pass out after calling them failures. It works good.
Oh my god, that's so cute. You're like a Norman Rockwell painting.
All right, I don't know what that is, art person.
Okay.
Art Garfunkel.
Hit your books. Yeah, really quickly.
Hit that. Go real quickly. Just do it, man. Just do your bit.
Five Ghosts, The Haunting of Fabian Gray, issue 4 out of 5. That was a toot, if you heard that. That was a toot-toot train.
Climb aboard the toot-toot train, everybody.
Are you Jim Davis? What just happened?
Like the Garfield guy?
Yeah.
I don't think I get that reference.
It just seems like that would be something Garfield would say at the end of the third panel. Wow, Jim, you are a... John? Who the fuck is the guy?
John Arbuckle.
Oh, John, you are a toot-toot train. And then John Arbuckle kills himself.
I don't think you've ever read a Garfield comic in your life, because that does not make any sense.
Garfield's like, Mondays. And
what does that
woof,
even mean?
Woof.
Or ARF, I guess he said. Anyways, the five Ghosts Haunting of Fabian Gray, part 4 or 5, by Frank J. Barbier and Chris Mooneyham. No spoilers. This book is awesome. And
spoilers?
The artwork is very Sean Murphy-esque.
What?
Very Sean Murphy-esque. Maybe not necessarily in the face work, but it's very...
In the face! Sean Murphy! Like, in the face!
Face! Sean.
This is such a great, great, like, pulp action book.
Pulp action shot
like,
face.
I love this book. It's a really cool storyline.
I didn't pick up this week either. I think I might
pick up the face.
It's going to be one of the books that I'll get when it's a light week. Yeah. Not because I don't love it, but just because everything else that I'm getting.
Fair enough. This first page where he's like on this cross singing into this pool, that looks like a Sean Murphy.
It does.
One page. But anyway, yeah, I've grown to love this book more and more with each issue. Young Avengers number 6. Do you read it at all?
I have it in my file. I'm gonna read it tonight.
Yeah,
I love Young Avengers.
Kate Brown replaces Jamie McKelvey for this issue. It's kind of a story about Speed and Prodigy, I believe.
It's good.
It's not.
It's
as
not
the
same
stuff.
As
no.
Gillen and McKelvey.
Even
flipping through it, I'm like, I don't think I'll like this as much as Gillen and McKelvey.
There was some like kind of cool layouts and stuff, but it doesn't have that flair. You know?
Like I've read a lot of other Gillen stuff. And I like Kieran Gillen, but when he writes with McKelvey, for some reason I love Gillen's writing when drawn by Jamie McKelvey.
Yeah, they have. It seems like they're White Sammy-ish, you know.
Yeah.
They know what each other.
I've read this
page was really cool though, where it's basically showing Speed work.
That is really cool.
But
I've read Jamie McKelvey illustrated or Kieran Gillen illustrated by Greg Land a lot, and I don't like it.
I
know it's unfair because I'm sure it's actually written really well, but I can't get over how much I hate Greg Land's art.
Yeah,
that it makes it hard to actually read.
It's not even that I hate his art, it's that I just hate that shit-eating grin. Anyway, and then Secret Avengers issue 5 from Nick Spencer and Luke Ross, there we go. I really like Luke Ross. It's a very, like, very ink-heavy
How far is this book series in?
This is issue 5.
And it's still really good?
Yeah, I've really liked it. It's kind of just... It's still definitely going off the whole... Well, these guys do missions for S.H.I.E.L.D. and then we wipe their memories. And this is kind of dealing with the ramifications of it. It's a lot of stuff to do with, like, the sovereign nation of AIM Island. And things like that. It's just like a fun espionage book that also had the Hulk in it last issue. But
cool.
It's pretty cool. And it's definitely, like... More so about the inner workings of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that. Agent Coulson's in it, which is kind of neat.
That's cool. I've read some Nick Spencer that I just liked. Mm-hmm. Morning Glories is one of my favorite comic series. Now that I've read a lot of Morning Glories.
Well, that's like, one of those books
Bedlam's okay.
Yeah, I like Bedlam.
Bedlam story-wise, I don't really care about, honestly. Like, I really just loved it because Rossman was on it. And I love Ryan Brown, but again, like, his stuff is kind of mimicking Rossman when it's not really playing to, I think, Ryan Brown's strengths. And ultimately, I realized I didn't really care about the story. And I read the first Secret Avengers, and I thought it was okay. But I wasn't, like, blown away by it, but I'm glad to hear that you like it.
It feels like Morning Glory's, I believe he's kind of building, he took a lot of time to build up a lot of mythology and stuff like that, right? And, like, build up this kind of big, big story. From what I understand, I'm
Morning Glory's would be his, like, opus.
This definitely feels like we're going to do these quick little arcs, but everything, there's an overarching story to it, kind of.
He's really, he's very mysterious. Like, he sets up a lot of loose ends, or like opens up a lot of loose ends at the end of his stories,
which I like, because I love
as plants a lot of seed. He does that with his dick.
He just fucks everything
in my mouth.
That was cool.
Did you read either of these?
I read both of those.
I read one.
Let's talk about. Well, I loved both of these comics, actually. I thought both of these.
I have nothing to say about The Massive other than it was really good, and I like it better than the last storyline already, and I hope that Gary Brown keeps drawing it.
Yeah, Gary Brown is way better on this book. Way better than
everybody.
Christian Donaldson.
The last, I don't remember the name of the last guy, but I did not like him as
a Dana Gel Zelge, and I love Dana Zelge.
I'm sure he's a good artist. Terrible choice for this book.
I also like that it kind of went back to. I know a lot of people were bored with this, but some of my favorite stuff in Brian Wood's books, especially this one, is when he would have a couple pages like going over in gross detail about
specific
parts of the world. I find that really interesting.
I found this particular one was a lot more interesting than some of them have been, especially because the things they were talking about seemed to directly impact what was happening in the issue. A lot of his background stuff in previous issues, I'm like, I can see why this is important. But it has nothing to do with the story we're reading, so it was,
it
was just
kind of
frustrating.
In those previous ones, it felt more like he was building up the rest of the world, less building up exactly how it's affecting what's
happening.
This
is a better way to do it. World build in the areas where we actually are at that moment, so that it feels relevant.
It ends really exciting, too.
Yeah, it was great.
The Massive is still in my top five favorite series.
I like
ongoing series. And then a new one that I think is going to become one of my favorite series. A new one from Image Comics, one that I was really, really highly anticipating, by Greg Rucka and Michael Lark. Lazarus.
Excellent.
I thought this book was spectacular, like reuniting the Gotham Central team minus Brew. And also it starts
Strange
off.
Brew.
Oh my god, I love that movie.
I haven't seen it in like.
That was no gold.
Here,
in
have
Greece.
This one. It's a jelly. Cool effects, eh?
Oh, yeah.
The first three pages that are going. And describing bullet wounds, and then this woman slowly reviving. Oh man, it was haunting. And I think it's some of Michael Lark's best work. It's some of my favorite Michael Lark stuff.
I thought it was a really excellent issue, but weirdly enough, I preferred the back matter. Like, I love reading Greg Rucka talking about anything. I thought it was a great issue. I loved it. 5 out of 5. I can't wait for the next issue, but. I really love reading Greg Rucka essays.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part about the second Stumptown book, too, was all the essays in the back.
Yeah. I'm so glad this is an ongoing. I'm so glad I have a Greg Rucka ongoing right now. And this is a book that totally plays to his strengths. He writes action sequences and, like, fist fights and stuff so well. Like, just silent people beating the shit out of each other.
He did a good job.
I like that it's a cool dystopian world. A very interesting premise.
Weird sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, the main character, Eternity, or Forever?
Forever. Forever Carlisle.
Is very compelling, very interesting, very dark and troubled, and definitely going to be an excellent character to follow for an ongoing series.
I'm going to follow her.
I liked it.
But like I said, I think I have a bit of a dystopian future burnout right now.
Yeah,
because of The Last of Us.
Yeah.
But that's like my only...
I don't know from video games...
They're. Do you not know what they are, or do you not know?
I don't know from them.
What? You don't know things. You don't learn things from them, or you don't. You're not from them.
I like Super Mario World.
Do you?
I don't know from fun.
So you've never had. You're not born from fun. Like,
from fun, I don't know. I have.
Hey Rob, this guy's having a child.
I don't know from children.
This bit's over.
I don't know from my favorite.
Oh,
actually, I do know from it. I know from my favorite because that's the time of the show we're at, right?
Yeah,
are we?
Yeah.
I'm not jumping the gun. I'm not cutting you off.
My favorite.
No, I had one last thing to say.
You don't know from saying.
Farts.
I could just
I'm so
fart.
Glad you interrupted to say.
Yeah, you could just fart.
Guys, it's time to talk about our favorite comics.
My favorite comic was better than yours.
I disagree, because this was my favorite.
My favorite comic was better
Here's
than yours.
Here's the thing, guys. You can all Here's agree. The thing.
My name's Dave, and I like
I
to
have
party.
Picked. What's that
from? Oh my god,
Hot Rod.
No, you can't like to party. I'm the only one that likes to party.
I know for a fact that you don't party.
I don't party.
I also love to party. Okay, so here's the deal. This book has been my favorite many times. And if you have a problem with that, then I will fight you.
It's actually been your favorite 16 times.
That's unlikely.
Why?
Because there are only 15 impossible.
Issues. You don't know from math.
You don't know from book.
That's impossible.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
That was my Simpsons reference.
Don't bother, because Rob is just like, that's a funny thing you said. Someone should
Did
put
you make
that in
up?
The show.
I thought Sarah made up saxophone. For the longest time, she would say saxophone. I'm like,
wait,
you're funny.
I just like the idea that you thought that your girlfriend mispronouncing you. Really? Oh, I thought she just made up mispronouncing a word.
No, she would always go, saxophone.
Oh, I see.
Saxophone. I was like, why are you doing that? That's so funny.
What is weird about that is I watch a lot of Simpsons and it's always called a saxophone, but I can't remember very many episodes where anyone goes, saxophone.
She showed me the clip. It's
saxophone.
She showed me the clip online because she was blown away that I didn't know what she was talking about, and it's where Lisa leaves the house and she's not there, and Homer goes into her room and is like, Lisa, she's gone. And then he looks over at her music and goes, saxophone.
Okay.
Saxophone.
Okay. I don't know how we got to this, but
moving on.
We were talking about my favorite comic, right?
Yeah.
Moving on.
I had something to say too, and it
was it another Simpsons reference?
No, but it was probably just dumb. So we'll go right ahead.
All
right,
we'll go with that. My favorite was Fatale number 15, Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips,
Fat Alley,
colors by Elizabeth Breitweiser.
It was very good.
Our The One-Legged Man got broken out of prison too, which was wicked. That was so great. That was such a kick-ass scene.
I think this was my favorite Fatale in a while.
I wouldn't say that.
I
because
loved the
I
last
loved
arc,
all
but
of it.
But I also I loved the last one-shots. But my favorite Fatale reading experience now is arcs. Is like these mini.
So we're now that we're back to the main story. Like this one's cool because it's like Seattle in the 80s. I think it's supposed to be in the 90s. 80s, right? Early 90s. So around the grunge time.
Yeah.
There's a kick-ass bank robbery. There's
not a vagina in it.
There is a vagina. Yes, this is true. I mean, I'm not going to talk about the plot because
it's
if you
confusing.
Haven't read the first 14 issues, you don't know what's going on. But it was totally excellent. Really grody though. Look at all the grody.
Yeah, it was very violent.
Yeah, like
yeah.
That vagina.
That.
But I would also just like to point out that Jess Nevins comes back this issue, making his triumphant return, an essay on Aleister Crowley. Now this is so weird, you guys.
This is
go
weird.
Ahead, Ryan's got something to say.
Mr. Crowley,
I knew it. I fucking why are you singing so happy? It's not Mr. Crowley
because
da-da-da-da.
I haven't Mr. done Crowley. Enough drugs like,
is it's an Ozzy Osbourne
Black
song,
Sabbath
it's Ozzy Osbourne. It's a really good song. But no, the interesting thing, I was
literally... it's not Pavement, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
I was literally, guys, before I picked this comic up, I was reading the Wikipedia article on Aleister Crowley that very day.
Oh my god!
Up and I was like, what are the chances?
I was reading the Bud Dwyer Wikipedia page. And
that's not
that
anything
looks,
to do
that
with
looks
this.
Looks like him.
Okay.
Aleister Crowley looks like him.
Thank you for your
I was reading a Wikipedia entry on ants.
Okay, can I finish talking about Aleister Crowley, please?
I was learning
I would like
ants.
To read a book about him.
Not yet. No, the relative, the ant. A-U-N-T at Wikipedia.
Because I was listening to Grant Morrison and Alan Moore talking about magic, and I was like, I should learn about magic. And Aleister Crowley is one of like the names from magic, so I thought I'd read about it. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of a neat coincidence.
I just made a Magic the Gathering joke.
Yeah.
It wasn't me.
Oh, God. I got it. It's just...
Hey. Whenever you look at the cover, do you just think Bride of Frankenstein hair?
Yeah, I totally do.
Dudes, did you guys see the fucking Ghost variant?
No.
Ghost variant cover, I'm actually going to find
the
copy.
Ghost
variant,
Phantom
they're
and...
different variant systems. They're just totally different.
I made that.
Ghost variant is even more, like, tough
rare?
To get. Yeah,
okay.
Because there's fewer stores that do it. You can get them at AD in Calgary. But the Ghost variant of Fatale, Darwin Cook.
Awesome.
I'm going to go find a copy this weekend, I think.
Awesome.
All right, Rob, take it away, but please don't spoil, even though you know.
I
know
no,
you
won't,
but I just haven't read it yet.
I would hate to ruin this perfect.
And I'd hate to have it ruined.
Anyone. This is this is the comic series that I've probably chosen as my favorite as many times as Joey has chosen Fatal, and as 15? Many times as 16, actually.
Oh, right.
As many times as Ryan has chosen his favorite series. It's Mind Management by Matt Kent.
I've never chosen
this. I've never heard of him.
I had over 30 books in my file this week, and I read this issue 3 times. I love it so much. Yeah,
I
don't want
to finish half your file.
I know, because I keep rereading Mind Management.
I mean, don't bother doing research for our fucking podcast that we do every week.
I did. I read like 16 books. I read as many books as have been
don't
your
worry.
Favorites of Fatal.
He watched Hot Rod.
I watched Hot Rod while I ate a Subway sandwich with avocado on it.
I drove while I ate mine.
This is the end of the Futurist arc, and it has equally huge revelations, especially in regards to the character of Meru, that issue 6 did. Like the big twist at the end of issue 6 that kind of reveals what Meru's
dealio is.
Yeah, what the fuck her dealio
is.
What
the dealio?
Then this explains the dealio.
The dealio?
Yeah, and it's got one of my favorite field reports. I like when the horizontal field reports, when you're reading them in the margins of the book, get all wacky tabacky. Like in one issue, there were just like messages that Mario was putting in them, like "Help me! Oh my God, you have to stop reading this right now." It was kind of like the monster at the end of this book by Grover. And in this one, the field report becomes in the middle of these training exercise sentences. It's just like it interrupts it to tell you that. I can't even reveal it. That'll spoil it.
Yeah, thank you.
Never mind. It's a huge spoiler for what goes on in Mind Management. It's the most labyrinthian plot, the most beautifully illustrated comic book. It's always a perfect issue. Every issue of this book that I've read, I think, has been perfect.
Do you want to get ready to slap me? I haven't finished that hardcover I bought.
You're crazy. How far did you get?
Issue.
Did you not like it?
I know, I really, really liked it. I just like completely forgot about it, you know?
Oh. Hey Ryan, don't bother, don't read any fucking comics for our fucking comic podcast.
I read more than
I want to be the guy, yeah, I know, I want to be the guy who yells at people now. That's my new shtick on this show. I'm the guy who yells at people.
I'm the guy who makes jokes.
Are you that guy? Have you ever been?
I'm the guy
really?
Who tries
to
make jokes.
I like your jokes, Ryan.
Thank you.
What jokes?
I'm waiting for one. I'm sure it'll happen.
I have a funny one. It's my favorite. But, wait, is it next issue of Mind Management where he's working on the car, but under the car, so it is a brain?
I think that's issue 50.
That's not, it's the,
yeah,
one
it's
after.
The one
that's
the one
that's
September.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. This is number 12.
My favorite comic of the week was the previews book.
I think it's adorable that all other comic books try to be the best comic book, but why, you know, Mind Management is already that. So fuck off. All other books.
I will argue that.
That's a weird attitude. I love comic books so much, I want everyone to stop except for one guy.
In fact, anyway, I feel the same way about one guy.
Yeah.
Have you announced what your favorite was yet?
No.
Okay.
I'm actually going to do something fun for my favorite this week.
You're not going to just like bark the whole time.
No, okay. Not quite. Okay, I'm gonna do my favorite this week. Is Deathstroke issue 12.
What the fuck?
It's super weird. It's just this weird picture on Tumblr of a guy in a C-3PO mask looking like he's banging some broad.
What the fuck?
It's just a weird.
Hey, quick side note, are you guys gonna get the Star Wars?
No.
I
dropped Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm following, honestly, I read so many books.
Five Brian Wood books. I whittled it down to just the massive, I think.
I've read so many Star Wars comics that I'm fine not to for a while.
See, I'm just like, give me more.
Star Wars is great, though.
Okay. I agree. My favorite this week, like every other week this comes out, is Hawkeye, issue 11, from Matt Fraction and Dave Aja.
No, it's from Ruff.
Yeah, also from
that was the best part.
Don't be barking.
It's from soft, 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 because rough. Okay, this is what I'm going to do to talk about this book. What? Me help, Kate help, don't bad up, you low. Woof, Ralph. Sniff, sniff, Ralph.
This is great. This is a good
bit. Hold on. I got to get to another one.
Oh, this is glorious.
You're going to get a call from Comedy Banger any day.
Ralph, Arrow?
You are the new Paul F. Tompkins.
Attention, U-Truth.
XY point there.
I can't decide if he's like Andy Kaufman or just some fucking idiot.
Guys, first like, call. Thank you.
I don't know if he's Andy Kaufman or Dane Cook. He's one of
not
the two.
Strong. Good boy.
Nope.
Did you just pant?
Collar stays. What? Curl up, guys.
Still
there.
Doing this?
Collar stays.
Oh my god, the commitment to the bad joke is
great.
Staggering.
Now worried, never worried before. Once
oh
get,
my good lord,
one,
you're like the ninth season of The Office.
Out, hear you, total clean.
You were over
like,
after season
you
three.
You're halfway through the fucking issue. Like, he's gonna go through the whole goddamn book.
Yeah, but there's like four.
Rowdy. Like I'm a fish song.
Rob Idioto, like bro, that. Bro, bro.
Do you want to just come over and look at the chive pictures of butts with me? Because okay. I'm not looking at them now.
P.S.
Oh my god.
Jews de.
You couldn't even read that word.
Lucky, come. Aw, good boy. Good. Stop, eat, garbage, boy. Okay, okay.
Seriously.
Go. Come. Come, Lucky. Come. Lucky Pizza. You go. Don't know. Great.
Oh
Hawkeye.
God.
Come on,
it's
Lucky.
It's like when you go
hey.
Like an art, like outsider art where it's all done by like handicapped or retarded people or whatever.
Guys, it was reading time with Ryan, you butthead.
It's like over this past week when I was trying to conserve water so everyone would pee in the same toilet but would not flush it, and then you would walk into the bathroom and it would be like the culmination of four pees, and that was exactly the same.
I was okay. No, that
my neighbor's been watering his lawn every day.
I have
fucking idiot, really?
Yeah.
What a jerk.
What a dick.
He's had the sprinkler on.
What a fuck. Hey, I actually did that to illustrate a point though. I just read nonsense to you. That makes sense. That's
yeah.
how amazing.
Wait,
Dave
you're trying to
is.
Tell us that bullshit had a. You were just like,
yes.
No, I'm proving a point.
It had a beginning, middle, and end. It was a murder mystery starring Pizza Dog,
written by Chris Ware.
Like, here's the thing. Let me say something here, ladies and gentlemen, listening to this podcast. Please do not be turned off by Ryan's
no.
idiotic fucking review of that comic. It is a spectacular comic.
That's my point, though.
I know. I understand.
Amazing David Jaws.
He is amazing. Yeah, he's so amazing that he made that fucking thing you just did.
Exactly. Yes.
Him saluting.
Where Lucky salutes.
Yeah.
That was pretty
keep
great.
Eye place. And then.
And also where Hawk Guy is drinking coffee out of the pot and he looks down and he just goes, good boy. And then.
And then I did this.
Lucky just goes, ah. And he like, leaps.
Yeah.
It was really great.
It's
yeah. And so was that whole
adorable.
Bit there.
This was my favorite Hawkeye issue.
We should
I
do a whole
like
separate
the,
podcast of Ryan just reading random words.
I will read comics.
Do you know what that's from? Professor
I,
Joey Style?
I do know that
it's... It combines two things.
You have to tell me.
The image is from Otto Binder's poster
by,
for...
No.
No, the poster is for... It comes from Murder... now you've made my brain go school
blank.
Isn't
it Murder or something?
Anatomy of
Murder.
Murder.
There you go.
That's what the image...
Didn't know that.
But Pizza is My Business... there is a Raymond Chandler story called Murder is My Business.
Oh my goodness.
So they combine the Otto Binder, Saul Bass introduction from Anatomy of a Murder
that
with the title.
Cool.
So there you go, Professor Joey strikes again.
You want to
Professor
know
Joey, you are on strike.
My favorite panel in this whole thing was?
Sure. Yes.
Was when the girl dog walks by Pete's dog
and
like,
his heart broken.
And he's like, and she's like, nah, and then his heart breaks, and then she like, turns around out the door and it's like, and then
his heart goes
back
together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if there's two arrows pushing it back together.
This was an outstanding comic. And it would have been in running for my favorite, but I knew Ryan would pick it, so I didn't have to worry about it.
This feels like a creator-owned book.
It's
more
so
and more each time.
I mean,
I
if David Ajo wasn't already going to win a bunch of Eisners, he is now. Like,
This book, I honestly think the best issue of Hawkeye.
Oh, I think so.
And the car chase.
I don't agree, but it's up there. My favorite is probably still the car chase issue. But yeah, this was excellent.
I'm 99% sure, by the way, the next issue of this, of Hawkeye, is your favorite, Francesca.
Is he back again?
I'm like 90% sure.
Really?
Oh, Matt Fraction on Twitter said, maybe it's the issue after, but anyways. No, because he did this
issue.
Because
they're doing a Hawkeye annual with Javier Pulido, I think.
Yeah, because he did like in brackets the initials, and it was like, DA for this one, and then the next one was FF, and then after that was JP, and then it was DA again. So I don't know. This book always has spectacular artists. Like
it does.
Every artist, even like the Steve Lieber stuff was amazing.
I love Steve Lieber.
Yeah, and whoever I can't remember the other name of the person in that book. That was the Hurricane Sandy book. But anyways, yeah, this book is amazing, and this is if. Every comic was like, I'd hate that, actually.
Huh.
I love the fact
if
that
every
comic is...
Because then he would read them all to us and we'd fucking kill ourselves.
Because then I couldn't be like, guys, Matt Fraction, right?
What are all the weird snoring? Noises happening outside of my house? Is that Bender?
I think that's your dog snoring.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, we've put Bender to sleep. There's no way that's Bender. That's outside. Dude, that's somebody's gonna drill outside. That's not Bender snoring.
I noticed
it's
that when,
a
I,
guy
looked,
across
when
the
I looked
alley
over at your dog
drill.
And I noticed that it woke up your dog and he was sort of like, that's fucking
pissing
me off.
What
is
that?
In fairness, 11 o'clock at night is a strange time.
Oh man, it
I
is
have
so
a
late.
Fucking
I'm so
retarded
tired.
Neighborhood of people. They're fucking retarded.
Actually,
well,
I drill at all times. Ooh.
God, on that. Ooh-ah. Note, on that.
More margaritas.
Still going.
Come on now. Come on. It's the end of the podcast.
That hurt my throat too bad.
Ooh-ah. It's the end of the podcast. Yeah. Thanks for coming out, you guys.
It's the end.
I wanna
it's time
I wanna
to go
thank,
to sleep.
I
want to
thank.
All
I want to thank.
Of your host.
I want to thank Drake. I want to thank Counting Crows. And I want to thank Sarah Jessica Parker.
Is that Counting Crows?
Yeah.
Yes.
It is.
I did like something that was good.
So I want to thank those people for making this possible. And I want to thank Vans for putting up those off-the-wall trucker hats.
Well, you literally meant like the
those
Vans, like a
that's specifically
like a,
Mr. T's
like
van from
vehicle.
The A-Team. So
that's a my favorite character from the A-Team was always
Van. So until next week.
That's a red trucker hat, and my skin is
we didn't introduce
color.
Ourselves this week at all. We totally forgot. So in case you were wondering, I'm Joey G.
They skipped to the end, like, did they introduce themselves? I'm Robbie G.
I'm a member of the Federal Witness Protection Program.
Whose real name is Ryan Hetherington.
Oh, well, you fuck! No, it's Joseph Stalin. Very subtle.
Very. Yeah.
Did I call you Broseph Mussolini last week? I did.
You did, and I was just like, I don't think Mussolini's first name was Joseph. But
why?
You anyway, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week with...
Bronito! Sorry.
Bronito, that's better. Bronito Mussolini, that is pretty good. So there you go. I love you.
Sorry.
I love you guys. Goodbye. I love you. Bye.
Sorry.